Good Tuesday morning, Nashville. What is going on? Welcome into the Rundown here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. You can find us on the app as well, the Game Nashville app. We're on the Twitters at 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson is back at the Wholesale Inc. Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Ryan, I believe, is in his lair, his home lair. Ryan, what's up?
What's up, Chaser? How are you doing this morning?
Man, I'm feeling good. I am feeling good. I got a decent night's sleep, so
good.
That's always a win.
Those can be rare sometimes. So
I have not slept. You know, I would love to, and we're not going to spend a lot of time on this, but I would love to ask people if they have slept worse the last 4 months, because I know I have, and I think it's just a combination of worrying about everything. You've hardly left your house, and I know we're all leaving a little bit more now, but I haven't slept well in 4 months. So
that is a curious question. I would be interested myself to go back on my Fitbit app to see what they say in terms of how the grades of sleeping that they've been giving me each night compared to what it was pre-COVID.
Yeah, but we're gonna power through because, like
we
I said,
do.
it was a good night's sleep. We're going to power through, and we're going to start with my favorite sport, NASCAR. I must say this. I was proud of myself because I had it on. I was doing Jared and the GM yesterday, and every now and then I'd mention who's leading or where Bubba Wallace was. But there were a couple of intense moments towards the end of Jared and the GM, and I got to see the last 50 laps probably after the show. But there were a couple of intense moments, and I had to bite my tongue or turn my mic off a couple of times to make sure that I wasn't going oh during the show. But obviously the big story was Bubba Wallace, the 43 car. And what was so cool to see was, not only did Richard Petty say, "Hey, I'm coming to the race to hug my driver." He's 82 years old. He has not been at the racetrack because of COVID, but he flies to Talladega to be with his driver. And then everybody in the garage area pushed the 43 car to the front of the starting grid. And what was originally, and we'll hear from Marty Smith in a second to explain how this all came to be, it was supposed to be the drivers, and then it became the entire garage area. And I thought that was really cool. But here's Bubba Wallace after the race talking about his day.
It's been hell, really. I wouldn't say hell. It's just been hectic, you know, carrying his weight and carrying his burden. I wouldn't really say burden either. I'm proud to stand where I'm at and carry a new face. Look at this. First time's right here from Atlanta. That is so cool. The sport is changing. The deal that happened yesterday, sorry I'm not wearing my mask, but I wanted to show whoever it was that you're not going to take away my smile. And I'm going to keep on going. I've been a part of this sport for a really long time. Still kind of a rookie. Starting to figure this plate stuff out. We had a good race going today in our Victory Junction Chevrolet, but man, I know I should have won that damn race. We ran out of gas. just the stars didn't align for us completely, but all in all, we won today. The pre-race deal was probably one of the hardest things I've ever had to witness in my life. From all the supporters, from drivers, from crew members, everybody here, the badass fan base, thank you guys for coming out here. This is truly incredible, and I'm proud to be a part of this sport, Jamie. Like I said earlier, I got a long way to go, and we'll keep on trucking. Another top 15 for us. We'll take it, and we'll just go on to Pocono, right? Okay, Pocono. So, hey, I'm still smiling. Long week ahead of me, probably a couple weeks, probably a couple months. Courtney's going to lay some interviews on me, so I'll be ready for Pocono, though.
Bubba Wallace finished 14th, and he was in contention. Was up towards the front, and there was it kind of became a fuel issue towards the end of the race, but he actually did lead for a little bit, and had a really good race car, but comes home 14th. And so a couple things stood out to me in that clip, Ryan. Number one wasn't even related to what we're talking about. It was that noise I heard. What was that noise? That was,
how good was that to hear?
Oh, it was fans. 5,000 fans were allowed into the Talladega Super Speedway. And it was so nice to hear some cheers at the end of that race. And Bubba had actually run to the fence where some fans were, and was was talking to them and celebrating with them, and how fitting that his best friend Ryan Blaney wins the race. I thought that was really cool because those two have been through a lot together. But you can hear the emotion. I mean, he was a little scattered brain at first because it's just processing everything that had happened over the course of the last 24 hours. But a cool scene at the beginning of that race, and then after the race with Bubba Wallace.
And think of the swing within 24 hours of one of NASCAR's darkest moments of their statement coming out Sunday night about the noose that was found in his garage stall. And then, you know, less than 24 hours later, as they, you know, started that race after it was postponed, and the moment that you discussed earlier of not only the drivers, but the entire crew members of all the drivers coming out, showing their support of solidarity to Bubba Wallace and the sport of NASCAR. And the selfie that Bubba Wallace took with everyone standing behind him is probably going to go down as one of the most iconic photos in NASCAR history.
Yeah, I would say so. And him almost falling off the race car trying to take it was pretty funny too.
For sure. But you could just tell too around those moments pre-race what that meant to him. Not only all of the drivers and the crew members, but also seeing Richard Petty and having that emotional moment with Petty before the race. You know, I'm someone who obviously has not been close to the sport of NASCAR here right. In the last 10, 20 years. But knowing the situation of Sunday and seeing that, I didn't see it live, but I did see it on SportsCenter last night. And even I got choked up watching all of that take place, his interview with Fox after the race that we just heard there up near the fence. That was a huge moment in NASCAR yesterday, a huge moment.
Yeah, and the sport is changing, and it's got a long way to go. That's something that we've been discussing, because obviously, and I'm going to say this, I know that there are a lot of thoughts on everything that's happening with the investigation, but it is an investigation. Now the FBI is involved. So at this point, you kind of have to let that play out. I'm not going to speculate all that much on who it was or how it happened or why it happened. You know, well, we know why, but just all of that stuff. I'm going to let the investigation play out. I just hope that there is a resolution and they find the truth. That's all I care about. Just find the truth. Find the, you know, what is going to be factual and actually happen. But that moment yesterday at the beginning of the race with the entire garage area lining up, pushing that 43, and they were led by the defending champion Kyle Busch, who stood out in his neon green suit, but he was there at the front pushing that car. So how did that all come to be? ESPN's Marty Smith explains.
They have a driver chat, Scotty, where all of the guys are in a single chat room, and they typically discuss, oh, you wronged me here, or maybe we should unify together and go to NASCAR with this idea, that kind of thing. But Jimmy Johnson led the charge yet again, and in that driver chat, he said, I'm going to go stand beside Bubba during the national anthem. And one by one, everyone else started to fall in line and say, we need to do something bigger. And it was actually Kevin Harvick who had the idea that they should push the race car in unison to the front of the field, well beyond the other race cars at the end of pit road, and that they should all stand with Bubba for the national anthem. And Scotty, as I saw, not only the drivers push that race car down the pit lane during pre-race, gives me chills right now, down the pit lane during pre-race, but every single crew member fall in line and follow them in this gorgeous moment of solidarity. I love to see that Darrell was overwhelmed with emotion. He should be, because he's carried so much, so courageously. And when someone does what happened here on Sunday night, and everyone stands with him and beside him and behind him and props him up in a moment like that, That's what NASCAR is about right now. And I am so proud. I'm proud today of what we saw.
That's Marty Smith with Scott Van Pelt last night on SportsCenter, and I am too. I mean, what happened on Sunday was horrible, but, you know, I always, and Ryan, you know this, I try and look at, okay, how can we turn a negative into a positive? And the solidarity in that garage area yesterday was a prime example of that, and it was cool hearing them talk about this group chat that they're all in, and, you know, it starts with Jimmy Johnson and then Kevin Harvick, and all of them are like, let's make this as big as it possibly can be. And Bubba was overcome with emotion, and Richard Petty runs in there and gives him a big hug. And, you know, that right there, I mean, that's just like, it's Richard Petty. that's cool. I mean, when I met him at Bristol, I don't fanboy all that much, but it was very hard not to with the King, Richard Petty. But I think that it was such a cool moment. And Jamie Little, who actually did that post-race interview and was on pit road yesterday, but did that post-race interview with Bubba Wallace, is going to join Darren Donick and Chase, Sands Chase, at noon today. So,
oh, very cool.
So Jamie will be on with them and does a tremendous job with Fox, was with ESPN for a long time, and does a really good job covering the sport. So I know that was an emotional moment for her, being right in the middle of all of that. So it'd be cool to get her perspective. But NASCAR has a doubleheader at Pocono coming up this weekend, Saturday a cup race, Sunday a cup race, and I'm sure that the emotions will continue as the sport continues to change, which I think is a very, very cool thing. And again, Ryan Blaney, I'm actually going to talk to Ryan Blaney a little later today for the Chasing Checkers podcast, so that'll be cool to get his thoughts on everything going on. When we come back, though, Ryan, could we have baseball? I mean, is this real? Is this real? Is this a thing? We're going to discuss that when we return here on The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Stream 102.5 The Game from anywhere. Download the Game Nashville app. Enable our Alexa skill or Google Home and ask to play 102.5 The Game. Or you can live stream from our website, thegamenashville.com. It is The Rundown. I'm Chase McCabe alongside Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson back at the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. And could it be, Ryan, could baseball be close to coming back? It does appear that they have an agreement. And so this was the, I guess, roller coaster that I went on. So we leave for our Gatlinburg trip Wednesday afternoon. And that's when reports started coming out that Tony Clark and Rob Manfred had met, and they were getting close to something, and then they weren't getting close to something, and then they were, and then they weren't. It was just all over the place. And now it comes out yesterday that it would appear that they could have something in place that would basically see the players would have to report by July 1. They could start play around July 24th, somewhere in that range, and it would be a 60-game season. And there are some other things that they all had to agree upon. But 60 games to me is meh. You don't love it. You don't love this setup, but at least maybe they have something in place.
Better than zero.
It's better than zero. It's better than zero. It's better than 48. But it's still, you know, you're going to have those people that go, whoever wins the World Series, they could have avoided that, though. They could have played 100.
There will definitely be that faction of baseball fans that –
And I might be one of them, Ryan. I'm going to be honest with you. I might be one of those people that even if the Braves win the World Series, yes, I'm going to be excited about it, but I'm like, man, 100 would have tasted a little better. You know, 110, whatever was feasible would have tasted a little bit better than the 60 game. But like you said, it's better than nothing.
It's better than nothing. And, you know, I mentioned these records with Elijah last week when you are out of through 60 games last season. These were the records of the playoff teams. You ready?
Yep.
The Dodgers were 41-19. The Astros and Twins were both 40-20. The Yankees were 38-22. The Rays were 37-23. The Brewers 34-26. Atlanta 33-27. St. Louis 31-29, Oakland 30-30, and then Washington 27-33. Obviously, Washington went on to win the World Series on their magic carpet ride in October. But for the most part, the playoff teams last season, and I only went back to last season and did this, but I mean, for the most part, the best teams in baseball ended up being playoff teams after 60 games. The Cubs and Phillies also had good records through 60 games. And those are the type of teams that, even though they were on the outside looking in last year under the normal playoff format, those are the types of teams that would still make it in an expanded playoff this season. So, look, it's going to be different. It's going to be the most unique baseball season of all time if it does happen. And we should learn today. Saw last night that today at 4 o'clock is the deadline for the players to let the owners know what they're going to do. And it would be a colossal failure on the players' part if they go back to the owners today and say they aren't going to meet the owners' demands of playing this season. It would probably cause a permanent black eye for many people on the sport of baseball. They've already lost a healthy number of fans through this. Who knows whether or not it's permanent for that.
That's my question. Can they get some of them back?
Even if they play, that's a question. It's an even bigger question if the players go to the owners today and say, "Nah, we're good. We don't want to play because you guys didn't meet our demands of playing more than 60 games with full prorated salaries."
Jeff Passan, who's been all over this for ESPN, was asked if the players will report to camp by July 1st and if they will agree on the health and safety manual/protocol.
The answers, Scott, look like they're going to be okay. We will report on July 1st. And yes, we will codify the health and safety protocol. And I say this with the same caveat that I have said month after month after interminable month on this program, which is this is all subject to falling apart because this is Major League Baseball and the Major League Baseball Players Association that we're dealing with here. But the number of players with whom I spoke tonight had the same refrain. It's time. This is the deal. Let's get back and actually play.
Jeff Passan with Scott Van Pelt last night on SportsCenter. I love now that his tone is just like, I mean, I'm going to report this, but, but it's probably going to change. You know, he's got that. We're all so just mad about this. I mean, that's just the best way to put it. But I think that's really funny at this point. Whenever I see Jeff Passan on ESPN, you can just see the look in his face like, I'm so tired of talking about this bleep. just get this done. But 60 games, that appears what it's going to be. And I was reading, you know, through tweets and in different articles, and it does appear like they will get it done. But I think what baseball now has to do, and see what you think about this.
Okay.
Now with 60 games, knowing that you have completely wrecked what baseball is from a season standpoint, you've knocked 100 games off your season, and you know the strategies that are involved. Now managers have to get even more creative. You're going to have the DH across the league. So you have to, that's going to change the strategies. They have to figure out fast how to make these games as exciting as they can be. And I don't know exactly what you do to change some of the things. I mean, you're already adding the DH to the National League is going to change something, but they got to get people hooked and they got to do it fast. They don't have a lot of time to do it. So I don't know how creative they can get, but I'm curious to see how some of the strategies change. Cause you don't have time to get warmed up now. I mean, you can't have a lot of times we see the month of April, pitchers they're okay, but they don't have their best stuff because it's a marathon, not a sprint. Now it's a sprint. Mm-hmm. So how do you change that?
Well, and to your point, they may not have their best stuff, or they may be on pitch counts. The pitchers might be
right
in April because they're still easing into midseason form. And, you know, one thing, I don't know if it's necessarily a strategy thing from the managers that would keep people hooked or get people hooked on this 60-game season. I think it has to come from the TV networks and from Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
And maybe with the national televised games, you mic up players in the outfield like they do in the All-Star game or spring training games. And you try to create a better image of the players as a whole through this by having their personality show. And ultimately, that's what Major League Baseball needs. They need someone like Mookie Betts to be mic'd up in right field or center field or wherever he'll play in L.A. and have that personality show. Because whenever that's happened with him in the Red Sox in spring training, it's always been very entertaining. Whenever they've done that in the All-Star game, it has been extremely entertaining to see some of the fun back and forth between someone at third base versus someone in left field at the same time. If baseball were to pull something like that off and the players were to agree to that, I think that would do wonders for how even some fringe fans might view the sport of baseball. But I think creativity like that and not necessarily within strategies is how you're going to win fans through this.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to have to get people locked in. Like, and I know there are other factors with NASCAR and why people are watching NASCAR. Obviously, we started the show talking about that, but their audience is going up. People are paying attention because they're the only game in town, and people are seeing that it's exciting. Now, you know, baseball has to figure out how to get people hooked back into their sport while competing with other sports. But I'll ask you this question. Do you think, as an avid baseball fan, you heard in that clip with Bubba Wallace, you heard the cheers. Do you think you're going to get to attend one of these 60 games this year?
Probably
I'm asking
not.
If there will be fans.
Probably not.
You say no.
At least to start, no.
Well, I'm not saying to start. I'm saying at some point this season, in this 60-game season, do you think you could have the opportunity that they're going to say, hey, we're going to – you know, at Great American Small Park, as you like to call it, we're going to let – how many does it hold?
41, 42.
So they're going to – if they're like, hey, we're going to let, you know, 5,000 to 10,000 people in, do you think that happens?
Which is a normal day game.
I was about to say.
In the middle of a week for the Cincinnati Reds. So that would feel normal. I guess it's possible. I'm operating under the assumption that just in sports in general – that these teams aren't going to have fans in their stadiums, not only due to health, but also even if the leagues were to go to the teams and say, you can have X number of fans in the stands, well, then the teams have the tough task of picking which fans can go. Are you picking just season ticket holders? Are you putting tickets up for sale? Like, what do you do at that point? Because nothing is going to be fair when it gets to that point, when you only have a fraction of the stadium full. So still lots to work out there. If I had to guess, I would say probably not. But like we've seen with NASCAR and how NASCAR is just moving forward with it, I wouldn't be surprised to see baseball go that route maybe in August or September.
Well, I'm going to say this on what you just said of picking which fans. No offense, because you and I, we're not season ticket holders. We're just avid baseball fans, and we go when we can. They're going to look, and they're not going to see a season ticket holder or, you know, a single game ticket person. They're just going to see dollar signs. How can I get revenue? And mm-hmm. and that's going to help them choose. It's going to be like whoever wants to buy a ticket.
Sure.
So I think that will be – that'll be the process. But does baseball get lost in the shuffle because they took so long to figure this out? We'll discuss that when we come back here on The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
I think that if baseball were to come back amid all of those other sports, and you know, it's going to be playing amid the NBA playoffs and amid the start of the NFL season, amid all these other things, it has a very good chance of getting lost, because I feel like the damage that was done here is as much to the brand and the idea of baseball as the game itself. It's as much to a lost opportunity cost. Baseball had such an incredible opportunity to really differentiate itself and come back and do things the right way, And instead, it was fighting like there was a collective bargaining agreement at stake when that's not going to be over until the end of 2021. There are a lot of things that baseball needs to fix, and it's got about a month to fix them. And the first thing that I think that needs to happen is the players need to come out and do the best job that they can of selling the game over the next month and trying to let bygones be bygones, as hard as that may be, considering the treatment that they feel they received from ownership.
Jeff Passan on SportsCenter last night. Baseball, does it get lost in the shuffle because of everything that's going to be going on? You heard him lay it out. The NHL playoffs with a different playoff format. NBA, same thing with their return. The NFL will be getting their season going. MLS will have their return to play tournament going on as well. And then the aforementioned NASCAR that has had their season going, UFC. I mean, there are other things that are going to be happening that baseball missed out on an opportunity because they could be playing next weekend and they aren't. So I find that very interesting because I think they are going to get lost in the shuffle. And he also made the point, Ryan, of saying that they have a month to get out in front of people and sell people on the game and let bygones be bygones. They're not going to. I mean, what makes you think that they're going to do that? If they were that smart, then they would already be in training camp and about to play.
Mm-hmm.
So I have no faith that they're going to do the right thing.
Sure, but what Jeff Passan said there makes it all the more important of what we brought up last segment of the creativity of baseball and the networks and the players becomes all that more important to keep people that are at least interested in watching these baseball games, to keep them hooked, because you have a lot more options now. And here's the other thing that, you know, we have to factor into this discussion as it pertains to sports is that, yes, a lot of people want sports back and we want to watch live games. Well, this quarantine period has had people get into now the habit of watching, say, a Netflix or Hulu or Disney Plus, or playing video games
or going
and
doing outside.
Things like that at home, going outside. And not only do you have to compete with the other sports, you have to compete with that reality as well. If you're baseball, that, you know what, if someone has you know, accumulated a new habit over quarantine through this process of watching a new show on Netflix, of watching something on Hulu, then maybe when a game is on, maybe the fan is going to sit back and say, you know what, I'd rather watch this show than watch baseball right now because of the bad taste that I have in my mouth.
Yeah, and I think you're going to have a lot of that. And that's something they're going to have to try and fix. But like I said, if they were smart enough to do that, to fix that, then they never would be in this mess in the first place. But the problem is, and he used that, he said it was like a CBA negotiation, which they do that next year. And that's the problem. And that the thing they need to fix is the trust or mistrust, I should say, between the owners and the players. That's what they have to figure out at this point, because it's hurting everybody. It's not just hurting one side. I mean, because I know I speak for myself. I'm not only mad at the players, I'm mad at the owners. I'm mad at baseball. I am mad at the entire sport for how they handled this situation. And so I believe that there are a lot of people that feel the same way. So that it starts with fixing the relationship they have with one another, and then you go from there.
And who's to say there wouldn't be some infighting with players? Because
absolutely,
I guarantee you there's not 100% of the players on board with what they've been doing. I guarantee you there have been some players that have been like, let's play. Let's play for our fans that have been going through a whole lot of crap in the last few months. They've been through the ringer. We need to provide some sense of normalcy for our fans. A faction of baseball fans that have been dwindling here in the last 15, 20 years. Let's play for the fans. I mean, here was Trevor Bauer's tweet last night. He tweeted this at 9:55 saying, so we gave up shares of playoff money, eliminating the qualifying offer for 2021, paycheck advance forgiveness, COVID-19 protections, and protection for non-guaranteed arbitration contracts for next year in order to hold onto our right to file a grievance. And then the thinking emoji. Guarantee you that there's going to be infighting with players too. So this is just a complete mess all across the board for Major League Baseball. And it's going to be very interesting to see how they get out of this. And yeah. I don't anticipate that being I don't anticipate them fully getting out of this unless there's something that is revolutionary with baseball, like something on the networks that we've never seen before that bonds the players with the fans.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have to come up with something because, as we mentioned, I mean, I'm intrigued by the NHL format. I know you are. You did your predictions last week and had them on Insiders last night as well. I think that's going to be entertaining. I think what the NBA is doing with their bubble, you know, that's going to be entertaining. Obviously, when NFL and hopefully college football, when they get going, we know what kind of entertainment that's going to bring. And it goes back to a question that I've asked you. I asked Floyd about a month or so ago of, do you think that there were some sports you didn't pay attention to just because you didn't have time, that you were allocating all your time to other sports because there were so many things going on? Now it's going to be better than ever from, you know, having that, you know, we always have that discussion. Is it October or is it April? What, you know, what's your favorite month?
Right.
Everybody is going to be on sports overload on top of what you just mentioned of getting in a new routine of watching Netflix or doing other things. So that's another, I mean, it's just, there's going to be so much. And I love that, you know, for what we do, but after the last 4 months, let's go. I'm all right about it. But I think for just the average fan, you know, okay, let's see. Who do I pick? All right. Do I pick the infighting sport or do I pick the ones that figured it out in a reasonable amount of time?
And you mentioned how you're intrigued by, you know, the NHL and the NBA. I'm intrigued by those sports, but I'm also intrigued to see what this is going to look like with Major League Baseball, because I think we're all going to have to accept that 60 games is it. We have to accept that it's not going to be the same as it would a 162-game season. But like I mentioned to you a couple weeks ago, there won't be the dog days of summer where we're saying, all right, let's just get to October. You know, we know the Dodgers are going to make the playoffs. We know the Yankees are going to make the playoffs. Let's just get to October and forget July, August, and September. There won't be any of that.
Right.
A lot of these games are going to feel like playoff games. And I tell you what, these players, I would assume, are going to be ticked off for greatness. So there's going to be, I would expect, a lot of passion in these games. I mean, 60 games, every game means something. If the Cincinnati Reds open their season 1-8 like they did last year, you can kiss anything goodbye as it pertains to a potential playoff spot.
You'll be unbearable.
Well, here's the thing. You can probably already kiss that goodbye. But the point is that 1-8 in a 60-game season is a complete detriment to a potential playoff bid. So the games are going to mean a whole lot more than twice more than what they usually do in a regular season. And I understand the whole, you know, this isn't going to feel like a normal season. It's less than 50% of the regular season games being played. But if you can accept the fact that it is going to be a shorter season, the product is probably going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
Because the games are just going to mean more.
I worry about injuries too. I think injuries are going to be something to watch because you're going to, you're used to training a certain way, and now, you know, and you're used to it being a little more, well, I mean, it's a compacted schedule anyway, but you can have days off and they're, you know, and all of that. But I wonder if guys are going to try and ramp things up because they know that every game means something and they don't have time to let the season play out. They don't have those dog days, and you're going to have more pulls and tears and stuff like that. Whether it's in camp or in the season itself. I think that's something to pay attention to.
Yeah, you might. And the veteran player on a team that usually gets one game off a week just to pace themselves throughout the season, maybe they don't get that one game off per week. And, you know, this is also where I think the teams with a lot of depth are going to be the better teams this year.
Yeah.
Because if you sustain an injury, you have to be able to sustain your success after that. And this is where a team like the Dodgers, which they are already loaded with star power, but they're also really deep, both offensively and pitching-wise, that I would expect the Dodgers to be a juggernaut throughout this format.
Yeah, and I think you're going to see some guys get a chance that probably weren't going to, just because of what we're talking about and the roster numbers and how they're going to have to manage that. So just a lot of different subplots to watch as they have until, I guess, 5 o'clock today to get this
– 4.
Or 4 o'clock our time to get this figured out. And it looks like they could be close to getting a deal done. Speaking of getting deals done, we talked yesterday about Derrick Henry. Dak Prescott did sign his franchise tender, but Joel Corey, longtime sports agent and now with CBS Sports, he came on with Floyd and yours truly and gave his thoughts on Derrick Henry in that contract. You'll hear from him next here on The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Do you own or manage a small business? Are you open and want to let people know about that? Then Free Business Friday on 102.5 The Game is for you. This Friday, we're offering free advertising to local businesses that are safely open and working. This is a no-cost, no-catch offer. Visit thegamenashville.com/FBF for more information. Free Business Friday is our way of supporting small businesses as we get through this together from your friends at ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're back here on The Rundown. Big Daddy Cool Chase McCabe alongside Ryan Porth and Marquise Munson back at the Wholesale Inc. Studios powered by RumbleOn.com. So yesterday, Ryan, on this show, we talked about Dak Prescott and that the report had come out he was going to sign that franchise tender. He did that on Monday. We did a little bit of a back and forth on, okay, who gets a long-term deal first? Is it going to be Dak? Is it going to be Derrick Henry here with the Titans? So when I was doing the show with Floyd, we got Joel Corey on, who, of course, is a longtime sports agent. He and Floyd dealt with each other quite a bit back in the day, now with CBS Sports. And he gave his thoughts on Derrick Henry, how long he thinks that contract is going to be and what kind of money he should get.
I'll say that from the standpoint that his franchise tag is shade under 10-3 next year. You do it again, it's a 12 and some change. And then you could put a transition tag on him the third year for another 20% increase, and that's about 14.8. And if you add those 3 years together, you're just under $37.5 million. And I'd say you guarantee the first 2 years and go from there. I don't think he gets to where Chris Johnson was when Chris Johnson signed in 2011, which averaged almost $13.5 million a year. And that may be one of the reasons you hesitate, because Vin Marino, the cap guy, was there when that deal was done. Nobody else was. But you basically paid Chris Johnson almost $29 million for one new year over the years he had from his rookie contract. So, yeah, Derrick Henry is your guy. He's the most important offensive player, but I'm not getting anywhere near Christian McCaffrey money for him.
Joel Corey from CBS Sports on with us yesterday. And I did find that interesting that he brought up Vin Marino, that Vin Marino is the only one in the building that, you know, knows some of the former deals that were done because he is the cap guy. Joel also went on to say that he would try and match up the long-term contract with that of Ryan Tannehill and where you could get out of both at the same time. So that would be essentially 3 years for Derrick Henry. But it feels like he's on the same page as all of us, that maybe a four-year deal, you get out after three. But I thought it was interesting what he said about the money.
Yeah, for sure. And I can see where Joel Corey is coming from on that. And it is interesting how he broke it down of what it would cost the Titans to – basically have Derrick Henry on one-year contracts for each of the next 3 years. And that necessarily wouldn't surprise me, but would Derrick Henry accept that? Would, you know, I would assume Derrick Henry would play this year, but if the Titans were to place a franchise tag on him again next year, would he then hold out to try to get that contract? I don't really feel like Derrick Henry is that type of individual to get himself into something like that, but you got to fight for you got to fight for what you want. We've seen this in the past, especially with Le'Veon Bell. I mean, he sat out an entire season just to get the contract he wanted but that has seemed to backfire on Le'Veon Bell a little bit. So not necessarily surprised to hear Joel Corey go down that road. I am intrigued by the three consecutive one-year deals of franchise, then transition. I am intrigued by that.
Yeah, well, and this is what Floyd and I got into with that, because he said, you know, from a team perspective, it would make sense to try and do it that way. Derrick Henry signed the franchise tender very early on. That's a sign of good faith. That's like, hey, I want to be here. I've made it very clear I want to be here. He got a significant bump in pay. You know, you heard Joel lay it out. It was about 10-3 is what he's going to be making this year. No signing bonus, none of that stuff that players like. But he gets a significant bump in pay. But he did that this year. Even though it would go up even more next year, you're asking him to put wear and tear on his body and then do the whole thing over again. And that's where you get into with the Dak Prescott and with Derrick Henry, getting them to do that 2 years in a row. I just don't see it happening. I mean, we saw what Kirk Cousins did, but it got contentious and then he ends up leaving. So I still feel like, and Joel said this at the very end of the interview, he thinks they get a long-term deal done. He thinks it's that is what both sides ultimately want to do. It's just a matter of actually doing it, and they have until July 15th. So I was intrigued by it too, but I don't – that's where I think a holdout comes into play, because I don't see Derek doing that, because he still has to sign it. He still has to say, okay,
sure,
I'm going to take that. So we know he's going to play this year no matter what, because he signed the tender. If he doesn't show up to camp, he's going to lose a lot of money, because he's going to get fined because he's in breach of contract. He chose to sign it. And again, I think it's a sign of good faith. And Floyd said that too. But I think at this point, the ultimate goal is going to be to get that long-term deal done, whether it's a 3 or a 4 year, for them to come to terms on something.
Yeah, and another, probably the biggest reason why Derrick Henry probably wouldn't do that is the lack of security within that. If you're just going year to year, you don't have the security of knowing that you're under contract for the next, say, 3 or 4 years.
Right. So I just thought it was interesting to get the perspective of an agent while, you know, talking to a GM. That was kind of cool. So that generally helps to get both sides of the equation. We even laughed.
So you had an agent and then you had a GM. What would be your role within that? If you have an agent and a GM, were you like
fly on the wall, baby?
The equipment manager?
Fly on the wall. Like, okay. I don't need to do anything. I even said, we joked at towards the end of Joel threw something out and Floyd was like, hey, if that's what it is, I'll take that. And I said, all right, Floyd, you call J-Rob right now. Joel, you call Jimmy Sexton. Let's just get this deal done. We've worked it out right here on the radio. You guys got the good relationships there. Boom, we're done. And unfortunately, it's just not that easy, but that would have been nice.
If it were only that easy.
But and you know, I'll say this every time we bring this up. I still say they get it done, and that seems to be the general consensus. Dak is the one where I think he probably plays this year on the tag, and then you're gambling, because you're paying him 31-4 for this season. You know that Mahomes is probably going to get a deal done. You know, Floyd brought up Deshaun Watson getting a deal, which I think he is. That's going to happen. So that's a part of it. And then you got to look at what his season's going to be. If Dak has an even better season, I mean, the price is going to go up. That's the gamble that you play. And Joel Corey even said that with Dak, if the Cowboys wanted him on a 5-year deal, they should have gotten the extension done last year. And they didn't do it, because now if you're the player, you're looking at TV contracts that are coming up, and you don't want beyond 4 years at this point, because then the cap's probably going to go up and you're going to be able to get more money. And so that's how players like Dak Prescott look at those things. So just and that was something that I learned. I mean, that was just a, you know, something to learn from the sports agent side of things. But we will see how that all shakes out. Now, you were a part of something pretty cool yesterday, the NFL alumni golf tournament that they do every year out at, I believe it was at Legends. So how was it?
It was actually at Gaylord Springs.
Gaylord Springs, I'm sorry.
Yes, over near Opryland. It was phenomenal. Al Smith, former Houston Oiler, putting on another great event with lots of former Titans players and former NFL players. Eddie George was out there. Keith Bullock was out there. Brad Hopkins, who we know very well, Chris Sanders, they were all out there. I also saw Nick Harper, former Titans defensive back, was out there. So it was cool. The course is obviously very nice. It was the first time I had ever played Gaylord Springs. Of all the years that I've been golfing, haven't played there yet. So that was a cool experience. And our team that we had, which was our general manager and a couple individuals on the sales team and me, we were joined by Jeff Walker, who used to play for the Chargers and the Saints back in the 80s. Very nice guy, now lives in the area, working in the housing industry. So it was a lot of fun. Always fun to raise a lot of money. I did not stay there for the dinner last night. So I don't know what the final number was in terms of how much was raised, but it was cool because it was your normal scramble. So there were five of us in each group, and they had different things at four. I think it was four different holes. One was a closest to the pin contest. Another was longest drive contest. And they also had a professional long driver out there who could just bomb it 350 or 400 yards if he wanted to. So he took a swing to show off a little bit. And that was really cool to see. I'd never seen that up close and in person. So fun event as always. And luckily the weather cooperated out there at Gaylord Springs. We only got a couple sprinkles out there when it looked like it could be a lot worse than that. So
do you feel like you carried your weight?
I did not. I was probably the worst of the five. I did not have my A game yesterday at all. I had a lot of shots where I hit it over the green. I was, the wind was a bigger factor at that course than what I'm used to. So, because there's not a lot of trees on some of the holes out there. So, the wind was kind of playing mind games with me, and I was not very accurate with a lot of my shots.
So of the group, who would you say was the best from our company?
From our company, it had to be our general manager, Dennis Guazdon, but one of our sales individuals, Jeff, who plays golf, I think, every single day of his life, it at least feels like that. There was a putting contest when you went from the 18th hole to the first hole, and when we did that, he did the putting contest, and he made a long putt. So
nice.
He then entered to win a bigger prize. So very cool afternoon.
Very cool. Very good cause. But that is going to do it for today's edition of The Rundown. For Ryan Porth and Marquise Munson, I am Chase McCabe. Stick around, though. Darren Donick and Chase, sans Chase, coming up next. I'll be on Jared and the GM today, starting at 2 o'clock on ESPN 102.5 The Game.